This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm your host, Heather Vail. Joining me is Will Abbott, Director of Development for Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada. The local nonprofit organization works with schools to inspire and prepare students for success through financial literacy and career readiness. Their second annual Golden Ticket raffle's coming up, but it's a little different from last year. Will, thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Heather. Great to be on the show.
So what exactly is Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada for those who don't know?
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for asking. So what we do is we teach over 20,000 kids financial literacy, entrepreneurship, and work readiness right here locally in Southern Nevada.
That's awesome. How long has the Southern Nevada branch been doing this?
We've been here for over 26 years now. And in total, we've actually served over 500,000 kids in that entire time that we've been here in Southern Nevada. And it's just been amazing to get to go out in the community and you get to see kids that are now kind of grown up and say, oh my gosh, I remember the time when that volunteer or teacher came in and taught all the financial literacy and kind of shared all the fun lessons about what real life is like. And you get to kind of see that impact throughout the community. So, but yeah. So over 26 years now.
Yeah, I imagine it is quite a big impact because, you know, generally speaking, financial education isn't taught in schools. So it feels like you guys are filling quite a void there.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that. There have been so many people that will come up to us, either volunteers or staff, and share that exact sentiment where they say, you know, we know kids that are incredibly intelligent, super smart, and can, say, solve a quadratic equation, but they can't balance a budget or have no idea what credit is. And it's those really life skills that we're really teaching kids through the programs that we provide to students. So
nice. Okay. Now, finances can become pretty complicated, especially when you start talking about credit scores and, you know, all the things that are involved in being an entrepreneur. And there's a little bit of math involved, of course. So how do you take finances and make it fun and interesting so that kids actually want to learn about it?
Oh, my. I love that. So what we do is our headquarters in Colorado Springs, they come up with the incredible curriculum. And what they do is they teach it. So when you volunteer in a classroom, you get a kit that has not only just a lot of fun curriculum and learning stuff, but they teach it in a way where it breaks down into games and other fun activities for the kids. One of my favorite examples is if you volunteer, for example, in a second grade classroom, you actually, as a class, get to open a donut shop and you introduce the concept of entrepreneurship to second graders. But it's done in a really fun way where you're teaching kids about, you know, what is entrepreneurship? And if we're going to make a donut and it costs us $2 to make the donut, how much do we got to sell the donut so we've got enough leftover money so we can pay our employees and so we can, you know, have a profit? And it's those really fun but simple concepts that we're teaching kids as young as kindergarten all the way up into you get kind of more fun, complex curriculum that we teach all the way up to a senior in high school. But in short, it's really fun because it involves a volunteer. And our curriculum is taught in a fun kind of, I'll call it a gamification way, where kids get to play and do an activity with somebody who's not just their teacher. It's a volunteer from the outside going, oh my gosh, this is an adult from real life, so to speak.
Wow, that's awesome. So you're talking about volunteers like anyone can do it. Is it open to pretty much anyone who's interested in getting involved?
Yeah, absolutely. My other favorite part about volunteering with Junior Achievement is, and again, they set up the curriculum that's done really nice like this. In one of our programs, you get a volunteer, you get to be the teacher for an entire day in an elementary school, and we'll provide the curriculum and we'll train you so you understand what you're going to be teaching those kids. And they write the curriculum in such a fun way where there's sections where you get to share about what you do personally in your life. And so we'll have people that are CEOs of companies, and they get to teach kids and tell kids personally, oh my gosh, this is what actually my everyday looks like. Or we've got architects or engineers or CPAs or accountants saying, hey, you know, being a CPA or an accountant might sound boring, but let me show you what I really do. I get to work with people and I get to help people at all different levels. So it involves the volunteer, but yes, anybody can be a volunteer, and we would love to have, you know, anybody who's interested, please contact us. We would love to have that.
That's awesome. Okay, so tell us about the Golden Ticket Raffle. What exactly is it?
So last year, we kicked it off for the first time ever. We really tested it, and it's called the Golden Ticket Raffle. And this year, it's similar. We're selling tickets for $100, and you get a chance at winning the ultimate prize package, hence the name, the Golden Ticket. And I like to reference the really hard to remember. I'm just kidding. You can go to thegoldenticket.org is our website. And again, we tested this last year and people loved it. And they said, wow, this is an exciting thing. And again, if you're buying a ticket, the coolest part is even if you don't win, you still really win because you know that you're getting to support more kids learning about financial literacy in all of our programs. So all the proceeds that we're raising from this really fantastic raffle go back to helping junior achievement and helping support more kids.
So you said you tested it last year by giving away a bunch of really cool prizes. So, you know, the test is done. What did you decide works? What didn't work? And what did you change for this year?
The biggest feedback, believe it or not, was we changed it to where we wanted this year's prize to be even bigger, if you can believe it. And last year, we had some incredible prizes. We had different tiers, different tier prizes. So that was one of the other big changes. But the other one is that this year, just like in kind of the Golden Ticket, there's really one big winner. So this year, there's a winner-take-all prize. And it's really exciting. The winner of this year's raffle, again, the biggest difference is really just that we've upped the ante and upped the game. This year, the prizes are over $10,000 worth of value in different prizes from all the packages that we've received. And it's been really amazing. Just a big shout out to all of our sponsors and all of our partners that have helped make this Golden Ticket Raffle the biggest one ever.
So last year, you had a bunch of really good prizes. And this year, you have one absolutely fantastic prize.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are some of the items that are included in the grand prize?
So similar kind of to last year, we've got a few amazing staycation packages at the Wynn Resorts. We've got a staycation package at Caesars. Topgolf has done an amazing VIP package for up to 12 people to go there and just celebrate and have an amazing time. And then we get to the really, really good stuff. We've got a 7-day, 6-night stay in Hawaii, in Maui, Hawaii. We've got a vacation stay in Newport Beach, California. And then I always like to ask, you know, if I want to go to Hawaii, I got to get an airline ticket. Well, Southwest Airlines, they ponied up and they said, we want to help support junior achievement. And part of our prize package is plane tickets, 2 airline tickets to anywhere in the United States. So all of this is, again, just kind of upping the ante for our really excited and lucky winner here.
So all of those vacation and staycation packages are all part of one big prize?
Yep. Yeah. One person wow. is going to win an adventure of a lifetime. So
that's amazing.
Don't miss out. Yeah.
So which of those prizes are people talking about the most excited about?
I would definitely say the stay in Hawaii in itself is probably closer to the several thousands of dollars worth. And then the fact, again, that Southwest Airlines is partnered with us again this year and said, hey, you know, if you've got an amazing partner that is giving this incredible Hawaii stay, we want to help your winners get there and back. So I think that's one of the biggest ones that people have been kind of raising their hands going, oh, my gosh, maybe I'll buy 1 or 2 or 10 tickets to, you know, give me a shot at winning this thing. So, yeah. And again, I like to say that really everybody's a winner because all the dollars raised here help go towards supporting junior achievement and all the kids that we serve. So even if you don't win and you're not the lucky winner, you can still rest assured and say, you know what, that $100 was well spent in helping the kids here in our community.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Okay, so when is the deadline to purchase tickets and when's the drawing actually happening?
It is coming up. The deadline is June 29th. It's the last day, and we're going to do the drawing on the last day of this month on June 30th.
Okay, awesome. So then the next question, obviously, is how can people purchase tickets? You did mention the website, thegoldenticket.org. So can they purchase their tickets right there?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, that's the easiest and best way. So I'll say it again. It's thegoldenticket.org. And on our website, even, and this is just kind of fun, we've got some really cool pictures and images, but also it lists all of the prizes that's included in this incredible, incredible prize package. The two main stipulations is you actually, because it's a raffle and because we're in the great state of Nevada, you have to be over 21 to buy a ticket. And you actually have to be in the state of Nevada to purchase a ticket as well.
You have to be a Nevada resident, or you have to just be here at the time?
Just have to be here. Thank you for clarifying that. You just have to be here. So yeah. So if I was visiting from the Bahamas or visiting from California or someplace else, and I visited thegoldenticket.org, there's a really simple box I just clicked that I was in the state of Nevada when I purchased those tickets, and that I'm obviously over 21.
Nice. Okay. Now, we did talk earlier about getting involved as a volunteer. So if someone wants to do that, where do they go to find out how to sign up to be a volunteer?
You can go to jasnv.org. So it's jasnv.org, which is short for Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada.org. And I was going to mention also on our Golden Ticket website, again, if you want to buy tickets, it's an incredible, incredible raffle, thegoldenticket.org. We've got some other information even just on that website as well that will help direct you back to our home website as well. So,
perfect. So thegoldenticket.org is the website to go to. The deadline is June 29th. The drawing is June 30th. Thegoldenticket.org. You can see the prize package that's there. You can find out all the things that you'd be winning if you happen to win this amazing prize package. And again, it's thegoldenticket.org. Go there by June 29th and get the tickets. They're $100 each. So June 29th is the deadline, thegoldenticket.org. And then if you want to find out more about Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada and all the amazing things that they're doing, you can either click through from there or go to jasnv.org, which is Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada, jasnv.org. But go to thegoldenticket.org for sure. Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Heather.
Thegoldenticket.org.
Oh, I love it. I love it. One last thing I just love sharing about all of our volunteers is a lot of them, they'll go into the classroom, they'll learn about teaching kids about financial literacy, they'll teach kids about different career paths that they potentially could go down, and they'll teach them again about entrepreneurship. And volunteers, after they teach a class, it's the coolest thing because you see them get inspired and A, want to give back even more, but also I've had adults go, oh my gosh, when I was teaching this to third graders, I didn't know this. And this is such a fun thing for me. And I get to share it with my family. And so it's all around just such a fun thing. My personal fun story was we're volunteering and teaching a third grade class. And in the lesson, you're teaching the difference between the different types of money. So the difference between credit and debit and what, you know, currency is. And we had a little girl, they raised their hand and they asked, "Mister, can you teach us about cryptocurrency and Bitcoin?" And this was from a third grader, a 10-year-old. And I go, "No, because the adults haven't figured this out. That's a great question." It's so much fun because you spawn all this curiosity between the adults and the kids. And it's just such a fun, fun thing to do.
That's amazing. All right. So Will Abbott, Director of Development for Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada, letting you know exactly what is so amazing about volunteering for this organization. So again, Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada, but the Golden Ticket raffle is happening on June 30th. You have to buy your ticket by June 29th. So make sure you go to thegoldenticket.org before that time, thegoldenticket.org. And Will, I want to thank you so much again for being here. It's always fun talking to you. And I love hearing what you guys are doing. You're making a great impact in the community. And especially with this golden ticket, this sounds fantastic. And as you said, even if you don't win, that $100 goes directly to support the amazing things you're doing at Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada. So thank you so much for being here and letting us know all about it.
Thank you so much, Heather. I can't tell you how much we appreciate you guys letting us share what we're doing in the community. Thank you so much, Heather.
When students struggle because they are hungry
or fall behind because they lack school supplies,
a caring adult can make all the difference.
Especially someone from the community.
Someone who knows the students
and the obstacles they might be facing.
At Communities in Schools, our site coordinators surround students with a community of support
to ensure that they have everything they need to engage in learning.
We go all in for kids, all day, every day.
To learn more, visit communitiesinschools.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm speaking with Steve Rushoff, principal of Edward Jones. A new study found saving for college education is a priority despite economic challenges, but many people are unsure how to save. Steve, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Heather, for having me on. It's great to be with you.
So what exactly did your study find about people's desire to save money for college?
Well, Heather, Edward Jones, this is our 12th time doing this survey. We do it every year, and it's on education savings and 529 plan awareness. And we learned that saving for child's education costs is still a top five financial priority for Americans. But two out of three Americans can't correctly identify a 529 plan as a vehicle for education savings. And that lack of awareness is at its lowest level in 4 years. And you know, Heather, that's really a shame. Folks are leaving money on the table because they're missing out on helpful benefits like tax savings and the flexibility of these plans that can make every dollar saved go further.
Okay, so explain to us exactly how a 529 plan works.
A 529 plan is a savings vehicle. So many people are familiar with 401k plans or IRAs or Roth IRAs. And so 529 plans are sort of in a category like that where it's a savings plan with certain tax benefits. But those tax benefits are only realized if used for qualifying education costs. So contributions go into the plan, investment earnings are federally tax deferred, and withdrawals are federally tax free, again, if used for qualifying education costs.
Okay, so what happens if we're building up a 529 plan for our child to go to college, and then he turns 18, decides not to go? What happens with the money that's in that 529 plan at that point?
So Heather, that's a great question, and that's one of the barriers or concerns that folks have about setting up a 529 plan. And so I would point to multiple things. One is the 529 plan beneficiary has a lot of flexibility. You can name that child, you can change the beneficiary to another child, a grandchild, a relative, even a friend's child if you choose to. So the beneficiary doesn't have to be related to the owner. There's multiple education types that can be used that are qualifying withdrawals in a 529 plan. So it's not just college tuition. It's room, it's board, it's books. K-12 education qualifies, community college, trade school, things like that. And last but certainly not least, the Secure 2.0 Act last year passed that if there's unused assets in a 529 plan, up to $35,000 could be rolled over to a Roth IRA for the benefit of that beneficiary starting in 2024.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. So you did mention that people are interested in saving for college for their kids or for themselves, presumably, but that a lot of people were unaware of the 529 plan. So those people who were unaware, how exactly are they prioritizing saving for college, or what kind of other vehicles are they using for that?
So there's just a lot competing for consumer dollars. And so, you know, in some cases, they're not saving, they're using student loans, they're using their own personal savings. Sometimes it's just basic expenses are competing for those resources around saving for education, or there's conflict between how much do I save for education versus saving for retirement? And that's why we'd encourage folks to use the help of a financial professional, like a financial advisor, like one of the 18,000 that we have at Edward Jones. They can really help advise on the trade-offs, getting started in a 529 plan, if that's right for you. It's really one of the best ways to go.
Okay. And if a 529 plan isn't right for us, what are some of the other ways that we could effectively save for a college education?
So I would say that, you know, if you're paying federal income taxes, you really should look at a 529 plan because the tax savings help stretch your savings dollar. But of course, some people are using personal savings, paying tuition out of cash flow, student loans, financial aid. There's a lot of resources available. And one of the things that we've learned in the survey is that, you know, given the headwinds around inflation and market volatility in the pandemic, that folks are more open than ever to alternatives to four-year university. So online college, community college, trade school, even going into employment after high school. And one of the interesting things and the good things about a 529 plan is it can be used for most of those, like trade school, community college, K through 12 education. Those would all be qualifying withdrawals from a 529 plan and help trigger the tax benefits.
Nice. Okay. So where can people go to learn more about 529 plans or about financial planning in general?
So Edward Jones is one of the largest providers of 529 plans in the United States. We've got 18,000 financial advisors all over North America. And so folks can go to edwardjones.com and learn more.
Okay, awesome. EdwardJones.com is the website to go to, EdwardJones.com. You can learn more about financial planning. If you decide to utilize a financial planner, you can find them there. And you can also learn more about 529 plans if your child is going off to college in the future or if you're saving for college yourself. So 529 plan is the name of the plan and EdwardJones.com is the website. And Steve, I want to thank you so much for being here, letting us know more about it and where to find the information. It's obviously an important topic and an important thing to save for. So I really appreciate your expertise and your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather.
This message is for Shauna, my mom, who just finished her high school diploma. I wanted to say I'm so proud of you for finishing school. You told me it's never too late to achieve your dreams. I hope to make you as proud as you have made me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Charlotte A. Burroughs, Chair for the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. More than half of pregnant women work full-time during pregnancy, and almost three-quarters return to work within 6 months after giving birth. The Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, or PWFA, is a new federal law that requires covered employers to provide certain conditions. Charlotte, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So what exactly is the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act?
First of all, the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, let me tell you, is our agency, the EEOC, is the primary federal agency responsible for enforcing discrimination laws. And the pregnancy discrimination, while it's already against the law, this new Pregnant Workers Fairness Act will fill in important gaps. It's a new federal law taking effect on June 27th. And what it does is require that any employer that has 15 or more employees provide reasonable accommodation to applicants or workers who are experiencing pregnancy, childbirth, or any related medical condition absent an undue hardship to the employer. So what that means is that the new law is going to be able to allow someone who's pregnant to get a reasonable accommodation if they need something like the chance to sit down or take a water break at work. Those applicants and employees that have a limitation, if it's related to pregnancy or childbirth or a medical condition, can keep working with those modifications. If they need, say, a chance to do their job a little differently, maybe they have to normally lift, they can during the period of their pregnancy while they have that limitation, not have to lift as much. So those kinds of very practical things are things that Congress has stepped in and said, we're going to make sure that we can keep those employees healthy and on the job because it benefits our economy.
Okay, so if someone works for a company with 15 or more employees and they're pregnant or recently gave birth, then they'll be covered and can expect reasonable accommodations to help them.
That's right, unless it would pose an undue hardship to the employer. So, you know, a really unreasonable amount of expense or difficulty for the employer. But most of the things that arise in the normal course would not be in the category that an employer could not do them without undue hardship.
Okay. And would this include other things that new mothers need to do, such as have a private place for pumping breast milk and that sort of thing?
Yes, although I should say that while our agency doesn't enforce it, the Department of Labor will be also enforcing the PUMP Act, which means that there's a separate law that says that pretty much, you know, there are very strict requirements that employers have to be able to do that. So that is also covered by, you know, the right to have a quiet and clean and safe place to express breast milk is also separately covered by an additional statute that was passed at the same time. So these are sort of companion statutes.
Got it. Okay. So will employers who have 15 or more employees be notified of these changes, or is it up to the employee to ask for the accommodations?
Both. The employer obviously can't give the accommodation if they don't know about the need. So if someone, say, needs to take off to go to the doctor because they have, you know, they need to have those regular well patient visits in order to make sure they have a healthy pregnancy, the employer doesn't know about it unless you ask. Or if they need extra breaks, then the employer needs to be told that. But the employers, in terms of the overarching obligation, that's something that we are doing a lot of work now talking about. I know members of Congress who are very happy on a bipartisan basis to talk about it are also doing that. But our agency, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, has already started to educate employers about their obligations and how to meet them. And we're going to continue to be doing that all year, but particularly as the law takes effect on June 27th of this year.
Perfect. Okay. Now, since there seems to be some changes happening that listeners might not be aware of, what are some other federal laws besides what you've mentioned that also might apply to pregnant workers or new parents?
Sure. I'm so glad you asked that. So pregnancy discrimination and harassment, honestly, has been against the law for a long time. But let me walk you through some of those basic protections. So if you're a job applicant or any employee who thinks that an employer has discriminated against you because of your pregnancy or your pregnancy-related disability, you should contact the EEOC to help if your employer does not address it. Let me talk about what those protections are. First, we have the initial protection under Title VII, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which also includes within it the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, as well as the Americans with Disabilities Act, believe it or not, can both entitle workers to have certain accommodations, benefits for the employer to modify their work based on pregnancy, childbirth, or related medical conditions. Again, as I mentioned earlier, the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act goes further and specifically requires that protections from employers, they give reasonable accommodations in more situations, so filling in those gaps. So the way to think about this is across the board, you certainly cannot be discriminated against because of pregnancy. You can't be fired, or no one can refuse to hire you because of pregnancy. I know that happens a lot, but if you go to a job interview and the employer realizes that you're pregnant or you share that information, that cannot be the basis for refusing to hire someone. The Family and Medical Leave Act of 1993 provides already covered employees with unpaid job protected leave for certain family and medical reasons. So if you have to take off after childbirth, most people do, that's protected up to, I believe, 3 months under the Family and Medical Leave Act. The PUMP Act, which I mentioned earlier, broadens workplace protection for employees to have a designated private place to express breast milk if they're breastfeeding. So all of those together really do create, now that we have the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act as well, a situation where legally employers have got to work with a pregnant employee or someone who has a related medical condition to make sure that person can stay on the workforce if they have the ability and willingness to do it. And that means sometimes changing their job requirements. Again, as I mentioned, lifting, you can do that, put someone on light duty. That's actually now going to be required unless it's an undue hardship. So that's, in a nutshell, the landscape, if you will, with respect to pregnancy protection.
Okay, fantastic. So where can people go if they want to find out more information about the new Pregnant Workers Fairness Act or even information about some of the other laws that you mentioned that are in place to protect them?
Absolutely. So EEOC.gov is our website, and that is where you can go to find out all about you know, the law, how to reach us if you do think that your employer has discriminated against you. We also have a toll-free number, 800-669-4000. So the toll-free number to reach our agency if you need to report discrimination is 800-669-4000, or even if you just have questions about whether or not what you've experienced is discrimination. And of course, you can follow our social media pages from the EEOC for more information and helpful resources. We plan to continue pushing those out to do webinars, et cetera, to make sure not only that employers know their obligations, but employees know their rights.
Okay, perfect. So once again, EEOC.gov is the website to go to. EEOC.gov, it stands for Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. So EEOC.gov. If you want to call, it's 800-669-4000, 1-800-669-4000, or find them on social media at EEOC. And Chair Burrows, I want to thank you so much for being here today and letting us know more about what is going on with these laws and what protections are in place, especially the new changes that sound like a lot of great news. So I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Every child deserves good vision to be able to read, learn, or kick a ball. Each day a child can't see, they fall behind. Together we can change that. Eye Care for Kids is the solution. In the past 21 years, we've helped over 500,000 underserved children with vision screenings, exams, and eyeglasses. Your contribution today can provide the gift of sight for a child tomorrow in Las Vegas. Donate now at eyecare4kids.org.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and joining me is Reed Porter, Senior Director of State Relations at Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, or PhRMA. In a new nationwide poll, 86% of respondents said lowering out-of-pocket costs for prescription medications should be a top priority. Reed, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me on.
So what exactly is PhRMA?
So PhRMA is the Pharmaceutical Researchers and Manufacturers Association of America. And so we're here to really help talk through some of the patient concerns and manufacturing concerns about what's going on here with American healthcare.
Okay. And what did your recent survey reveal about financial concerns related to healthcare?
Well, really, you know, the dialogue across the states is pretty clear, and especially in Nevada. Too many Americans, too many Nevadans are struggling to access or afford healthcare. And our recent poll found that most Nevadans and most Americans agree that lowering out-of-pocket costs should be a top policy priority. Nevadans support common sense solutions to help people pay less for their medicines and to strengthen oversight of health insurers and their middlemen, which are also known as pharmacy benefit managers or PBMs. It's a simple question, really. If they don't pay full price for medicines, why should you?
Okay, so what are some of those common sense solutions or policy changes that would actually help lower healthcare costs?
Thank you for asking. Indeed, we went through this in our poll. And specifically, there are actually a handful of states that are enacting some of these already. And there are multiple paths to support patients and help them pay less for medicines. Those include share the savings, which again, states like West Virginia, Arkansas are already implementing. Indiana also just passed this policy. And what this does is that states can require that the rebates and discounts that insurers, pharmacy benefit managers, and others already receive today are directly shared with patients at the pharmacy counter. There's also coupons. Coupons should count. In some cases, health insurance companies are not allowing coupons manufacturers provide to patients to count towards deductibles or other cost-sharing requirements. What this means is that patients could be paying thousands more at the pharmacy counter than they should be. We should also be offering lower, more predictable cost-sharing solutions. Every state should require health insurers to offer at least some health plan options. These would exclude medicines from the deductible and offer set copay amounts instead of forcing patients to pay an amount based on the full list price of their medications. In fact, there is a lot of conversation happening right now in Nevada, and a bill I believe it's on the way to the governor now, called AB 250. Unfortunately, as both pharma has testified and the culinary union has testified, this is an experiment that may not work well for Nevada. In our point of view, it does nothing but put up another barrier to care, which could further health inequities. It could force those who can't afford it, like richer people, to fly to other states to access what they need. But it puts those who have cost constraints, poor people, out of luck. Whereas right now, there are assistance programs, whether it's state, federally, or through programs or coupons that exist, and you can go to MAT.org to find those coupons from manufacturers. But AB 250 would subject those opportunities to private rights of action. And right now, that's actually a choice happening in front of lawmakers.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that PBMs don't pay full price, but consumers do pay full price. Wouldn't the simplest solution just be to make it so that PBMs pass those savings on to consumers?
Well, that's exactly right. And Nevadans support that. More than half of the state is in full support of doing so. And really, that is one of the prime priorities that we have here at Pharma, is to ensure that these rebates and discounts are making it to actual patients at the pharmacy counter. 81% of Nevadans have made this a very popular solution to lower prescription drug costs.
Okay, now, are there any policies that would lower out-of-pocket costs that people don't support for whatever reason?
A handful of states did actually implement prescription drug affordability boards. And while they might sound good in name, most Americans reject this form of government price setting of medicines once they learn about the trade-offs. In Nevada specifically, that's 60%. Once they learn that it could limit people's access to newer prescription medicines, they also do not support prescription drug affordability boards when it could interfere with doctors' decisions about which medications to prescribe that would best meet the needs of their patients. When people learn that these drug boards, which are put together by bureaucrats that they don't actually elect, this could result in fewer treatments and medicines for people to choose from. More than 60% of Americans really push back on that idea.
Okay. Now, it sounds like there's a lot of big picture things going on. Things are happening at the government level that may benefit or may not benefit consumers. So what can we as individuals do to make a positive change about this issue?
Get involved. It's a complicated issue. Healthcare, it takes some work to look into. And that's mainly because there are a lot of different steps throughout the supply chain. When more than half of every dollar is going to those who do not make these medicines, it's a problem and it gets really confusing. So, while policy debates about how to address these issues can seem never ending, the more that Nevadans get involved and really step up for their needs, the better. They need to contact their lawmakers and tell them the direction to go in. And they can learn more about this at pharma.org/states. It's a great place to go that highlights our state resources, data, and insights that we have for the public. And, like more information about this poll and other patient-focused solutions that states can enact to help patients pay less. That's pharma.org/states.
Okay. And then what was the website that you mentioned for coupons?
That's mat.org, mat.org. It's a great, useful site that more people should be using to find available discounts for the medicines they need.
Okay, nice. So once again, mat.org, mat.org, if you want to find out more about discounts for medicines, mat.org with one T. And then if you want to find out more about this issue and how you can get involved, pharma.org/states, and that's pharma without the first A, so it's pharma.org/states, and that stands for Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, so pharma.org/states. And Reid, I want to thank you so much for being here and letting us know more about this issue, what's going on, what people think about it, and what we can do to make a difference. So I really appreciate your time and your expertise. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Charlie did not die from an overdose. Charlie was poisoned.
Websites and social media selling fake medicines may look legitimate, but they're not.
He died in less than 15 minutes after taking the pill.
Any medication not purchased from a licensed pharmacy could be deadly.
No other family should go through this. It's just horrific.
Go to safe.pharmacy. Learn about fake medicine on social media and if an online pharmacy is safe.
Summer is finally here, and many Americans are eager to kick off the season of travel and new adventures. But this also means exposure to many people and germs. While the public's concern over the threat of COVID continues to decline, COVID remains a leading cause of death for many Americans. We are joined right now by Regional Director from the Health and Human Services, Jeff Reynoso. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Thanks for having me.
So jumping right in, even though COVID is not dominating our lives the way it was 3 years ago, why should people still care about COVID vaccines?
So while COVID may look a little different now than it did a year and a few years ago, it is still important that people know that COVID is still a leading cause of death in the U.S. While symptoms of COVID vary greatly, people who contract COVID can experience severe illness that can lead to hospitalization or even death. People who recover, even sometimes those who have mild cases initially, can experience lingering symptoms for many months, what we call long COVID. Thankfully, COVID vaccines can help lower the risk of these complications. If you're up to date on vaccines, you might still get COVID, but it's a lot less likely that you'll get infected, and definitely a lot less likely that you'll end up in a hospital or contracting long COVID. Even as the virus changes, making sure you're up to date on vaccines is important in reducing your risk of getting very sick.
Are there any other health or safety precautions that people should be following when preparing for a vacation?
Yeah, you know, it's summer season. A lot of Americans are traveling and have exciting summer plans, but that also means exposure to more people and germs. Additionally, people should be aware of any important health information specific to the location they're traveling, including travel health notices and required vaccines. As those hotter months come, you know, it's important to continue to use sun protection, as well as be aware of the risk of insects like mosquitoes and ticks that come with the warmer weather. It's also important to stay cool and hydrated by drinking enough water.
Great things for people to remember, you know, the basics. Sometimes some of those things get forgotten. Is there anything that people should be aware of around those updated vaccines?
Yeah, absolutely. So as we know, COVID vaccines continue to work very well at preventing the worst outcomes from COVID. If you are vaccinated or have had COVID, your immune system is primed and ready to respond when you're exposed to the virus. But the longer it's been since you've had COVID or got a vaccine, the more likely your immunity has waned. Updated COVID vaccines offer protection against two strains of the COVID virus, what are called the bivalent vaccines. And these vaccines may continue to be updated in the future if new strains emerge, just like flu shots are annually. An updated COVID vaccine gives you added protection from severe COVID illness, hospitalization, and death. And even if you've had COVID, a free updated vaccine can boost your immune system to reduce your risk of getting it again.
What are the latest vaccine eligibility guidelines for the updated COVID vaccines?
Yeah, so if you've already been vaccinated but don't yet have the updated vaccine, it's now time to get one, especially for people who are at higher risk for severe COVID illness, like older adults and people with chronic medical conditions. Some people are now eligible for a second updated vaccine. So those are older adults, ages 65 and older, are eligible for a second dose of the updated COVID-19 vaccine 4 months after their last dose. And for people with compromised immune systems, they can get an updated dose 2 months after their first, and even more frequently at the advice of their doctor. So if you've never had a COVID vaccine, you can protect yourself against severe illness and with one dose of an updated vaccine, unless you need another dose because age or health put you at risk for those COVID complications. And then finally, children 6 months and older can now also get the updated vaccine. So definitely talk to your doctor or your child's pediatrician to get all of the information.
What do you say to those who want to completely disengage from the COVID discussions? And furthermore, will COVID be part of our lives forever?
Yeah, you know, I think all of us are experiencing COVID fatigue. The reality is that COVID remains a leading cause of death in the U.S. and is still impacting a lot of people's lives and causing severe illness, hospitalization, even death. So while people may be tired of talking about COVID, it's important to remember that those who are either unvaccinated or not fully up to date on their vaccine are still at risk for serious health outcomes from COVID, including long COVID. So the best way to act on this and take those preventive measures is to get vaccinated. This helps people stay protected from serious health consequences down the line and avoid further disruptions to their daily lives. The last thing you want to do is go on summer vacation and get sick. So we're recommending you check to make sure you have the most updated vaccine.
And finally, where can we go if we want to find out more information?
So viewers and the public can go to vaccines.gov for more information. There you'll find information about the vaccine, about testing and treatments like Paxlovid. So definitely check it out for more information.
Regional Director of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Jeffrey Reynoso, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, I'm Nicole, and I lost my 10-year-old daughter, Teresa, to COVID in just a few short days. Teresa was a healthy child who loved to dance. When Teresa got sick, I didn't think it was serious until she was rushed to the hospital. COVID and flu can be serious for anyone, but they're especially dangerous for communities of color. Please get your COVID and flu vaccines and stay up to date on all immunizations, because vaccines save lives.
To learn how to protect your family, visit vaccinateyourfamily.org/learn.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and joining me is Dr. Mark Erkin, head and neck cancer surgeon, and Steve Holzer, cancer survivor and award-winning TV journalist. June is National Cancer Survivors Month, and Made of More is a new awareness campaign for head and neck cancer, which accounts for nearly 4% of all cancers in the U.S. Steve and Dr. Erkin, thank you both so much for being here today.
Good morning.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Erkin, what is head and neck cancer?
So head and neck cancer is a broad category of different types of cancers that occur in the head and neck region, and they range from everything from cancers that occur inside the mouth, known as oral cancer, to cancers that occur a little bit further back involving the throat or the oropharynx, and even extend down to involve cancers of the voice box and the upper cervical esophagus. They're all kind of packaged together in this broad category that we refer to as head and neck cancer.
Okay. Now, what are some of the risk factors that people should be aware of?
Sure. So traditionally, tobacco and alcohol exposure of a chronic nature tend to be associated with this disease process. But we also know that there is a group of cancers that occur in the oropharynx that are associated with the human papillomavirus.
Okay. Steve, what is the Made of More initiative all about?
The Made of More initiative is community resources where you can go and find out more information from people like me, who have had head and neck cancers, who are sort of sharing their journey and sharing what they went through when they went through their disease, but more importantly, how to go on after surviving it. All of the people in the Made of More initiative have survived some sort of head and neck cancer, or they're caregivers for head and neck cancer. And so we wanted to provide some place where, you know, as Dr. Erkin said, 67,000 people a year in this country get head and neck cancer. We wanted to provide a place where they could go, where they could find out more information about head and neck cancer and what it all entails.
Okay. And what was your personal experience with head and neck cancer and how it impacted your life?
Yeah, I was an executive producer of a television show here in Los Angeles when I was diagnosed. I had a lump in my neck that I found when I was shaving. And I went in and my doctor decided to take it out because it was near my carotid artery. It was right in my neck. And he took it out. And then 4 days later, he found out that there was cancer in it. My cancer was caused by HPV, which, of course, I know is the leading cause of cervical cancer. But I didn't know it was also a cause of head and neck cancers. So I went through 7 weeks of radiation and 6 weeks of chemotherapy.
And, you know, that 7 weeks of radiation is, you know, focused right at my neck the entire time. So my head was sore. My throat was on fire because it was, there was so much radiation and I had to get through it. And, you know, toward the, at the end of my treatment, I had to have a speech and swallow therapist that I had to go to help me learn how to, you know, speech and swallow, to help me learn how to swallow again. It made quite an impact on me. And that's why I decided to become involved with this initiative, because I want people to be aware of and know that that this exists.
Wow, that sounds like quite the trying experience. Dr. Ergin, what are some of the unique challenges that people face when they're living with head and neck cancer?
So exactly what Steve described, the treatment of for head and neck cancer can involve surgery, it can involve radiation, it can involve chemotherapy. All of those can have an impact on patients who, if they are fortunate to overcome this, the way Steve has, they may be left with chronic pain, they may be left with problems with swallowing, they may have alterations in their speech, in their may experience dry mouth, and some unfortunate patients may experience facial deformity, which may be associated with, particularly with cancers of the oral cavity. And so those all not only are physical challenges, but they're also the emotional and psychological challenges that come with that as well.
Wow. Okay. Steve, where can listeners go if they want to learn more about the Made of More initiative or find resources and support?
Yeah, the resources are madeofmore.com, madeofmore.com. It's a really good site for resources and community and seeing people's stories. And if you're diagnosed with head and neck cancer, knowing you're not alone. And I think that's as important as anything else, is knowing that there are other people in the world who sort of have what you have and have gotten through it and have gotten past it and are now off leading their lives, their productive lives, which I think is important.
Yeah, absolutely. So madeofmore.com is the website to go to, madeofmore.com. You'll find more resources about head and neck cancer and what to do if you're dealing with head and neck cancer. You'll find support there and a lot more information. Steve and Dr. Ergin, I want to thank you both so much for being here and shedding some light on this issue, especially for National Cancer Survivors Month. I really appreciate you both being here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
In honor of all those we've lost to cancer and those still fighting and thriving, like basketball analyst and cancer champion Dick Vitale.
I want to beat cancer. I'm going to beat it. That's no doubt in my mind. I'm going to win this battle.
Defeating cancer will take all of us. Join our team to help fund game-changing research that saves lives. At the V Foundation, V is for victory over cancer. V is for victory over the odds. V is for victory over health disparities, victory over setbacks, victory over the unknown. V is for victory over giving up.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Join the V Foundation team and help save lives.
Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind. It cannot touch my heart. And it cannot touch my soul.
Join our team in the fight against cancer at V.org.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include this Monday, June 19th at 8 p.m. benefiting the Nevada Wheelchair Foundation, and Monday, July 10th at 8 p.m. benefiting the Boys and Girls Clubs of Southern Nevada. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada is holding the second annual Golden Ticket Raffle with a new winner-take-all package. You can purchase your ticket for $100 through midnight on June 29th for a June 30th drawing. All proceeds go to support Junior Achievement programs that promote financial literacy for kids. Purchase tickets or get more information at thegoldenticket.org. That's thegoldenticket.org. Flavors for Life is the Las Vegas Mini Grand Prix Charity of the Month for June. Any Tuesday in June, you can purchase the one-hour Mega Ride wristband at the 7-acre Mini Grand Prix Amusement Park and mention Flavors. That will support Flavors for Life in their mission of teaching high school students how to cook and eat healthy to help beat the obesity epidemic. The Mega Ride wristband provides 60 minutes of unlimited access to the kiddie kart track, the go-kart road course, the sprint kart speedway, the tornado twister, and more. So visit the Las Vegas Mini Grand Prix any Tuesday during June, purchase the Mega Ride wristband, mention Flavors, and some of the proceeds will go to support Flavors for Life. You can find out more at flavorsforlife.org. That's flavorsforlife.org. And the Las Vegas Clark County Library District's free summer challenge program is running through July 31st, with lots of prizes for kids and adults, including bookstore items, water bottles, tote bags, museum tickets, a telescope, a $100 Amazon gift card, and cool swag from the Vegas Golden Knights. Sign up to track your progress or find out more at thelibrarydistrict.org/summer challenge. That's thelibrarydistrict.org/summer challenge.
Design concepts for creating a lasting 1 October memorial are now on display at the Clark County Government Center. One will soon be recommended as our community's memorial project. To learn more about the concepts, watch team presentations about each proposal on June 14th in County Commission Chambers from 4 to 9 p.m. and then take part in a short online survey June 15th to June 29th. For more information, visit 1 October Memorial Committee's website at clarkcountynv.gov/1 October Memorial.